Chapter 5.
Near Raven Gap, Georgia, United States of America, Sol 3. 0518 hours, EDT, Monday, September 28, 2009 AD. Mueller slid down the muddy slope and dropped to the ledge outside the cave, letting the muzzle of his rifle lead him in. The cave, that held what Papa O'Neill had referred to as Cache 4, was on a nearly vertical, tree-covered slope. How the eldest O'Neill had gotten the dozens and dozens of large and heavy boxes into the cave was a mystery. One that, on their previous trip, Mueller and Mosevich had been careful to avoid questioning. But on that same trip, they had also been attacked by a feral Posleen as they exited the cave. Thus, Mueller's caution as he entered it. The first change that he noted was that there was a heavy metal door in place. The cache had been open the last time they were here. All things considered, it was probably for the best, what with the occasional nuke round dropping in the pot. The problem being that they needed what was on the other side of the door, and there didn't seem to be any latches on this side. That, on the other hand, seemed to indicate that someone or something was on the other side. He was tired, and the thought seemed to come slowly. He'd been using Provigil, but all that really did was keep you awake, and you still got tired, stupid. Now he turned the gun around and banged on the door with the butt. "Anyone home?" Callie sat up at the bang and the muffled voice on the other side. It sounded like a human, but it was possible it was just a very smart Posleen. She picked up her stire and went to the door. "Who's there?"
"Callie?"
"Yeah?" "Who's there?" "Mueller, open up!" She set the gun down and pulled the door back, composing her features as she did so. Mueller just looked at her for a second, then wrapped his arms around her in a big bear hug. "Jesus Christ! We were sure you were dead!" Callie wiped at the tears in her eyes as the rest descended the slope and slipped through the door. She had to hug each in turn.
"Wendy, you made it!"
"Thanks to luck and some really weird shit," the girl replied, hugging back.
"Papa?"
Callie just shook her head, wiping at the tears again and wondering at the frozen expression on the face of the unknown young woman who was last through the door. Wendy turned and looked at her.
"Sherry?
Sherry?" Callie called. The woman in the doorway was about half the age of the woman who had come to visit their farm and promptly fallen in love with her still old grandfather. But the
face. "Sherry? Oh, God, Sherry!"
"It's okay, dear," the woman replied, stone-faced. "We all die somewhere."
"No, it's not okay," Callie said, taking her hands. "We were talking just when the Posleen attack. We were looking forward to you coming live with us. I was too. I'm so sorry."
"I think I'm supposed to be comforting you," Sherry said, starting to cry. "Not the other way around." "We need to get the kids bedded down," Elgers said stolidly. "We can talk about this later." Callie showed them boxes with sleeping gear, both poncho liners and blankets, then started an electric space heater. The cave had been comfortable enough for her, but the kids were obviously whipped. All of the children, even Billy, given reasonably dry clothes and a comfortable place to lie down, fell asleep almost before they were flat.
"How'd you get here?" Callie asked.
"Walked," Mueller said, pulling off his boots with a groan. "The kids were about dead the last 5 miles. We had to carry them."
"There's plenty to tell," Wendy said. "But first, how'd you get here, and how do you know what's going on?"
"When the attack got bad, we moved to the bunker," Callie said slowly. It was obviously hard for her to tell the story. "We had Posleen moving up the valley and things like flying saucers overhead. Then when the lander came in sight, Papa told me to pull back. He was going to follow right afterwards. Then there was a big flash. I was in the doorway to the inner shelter, and it sort of blew me in, I guess. I came to, and the main passage had collapsed behind me. After I got my shit together, I went out through the side passage. It had a cave-in on it, but I could wiggle through. The valley was trashed. It had to be nuked or something. The lander and Posleen were gone, and the battle in the gap seemed to have stopped, which I thought was pretty bad. I took a quick look around, but everything was just gone. And then I went to the bunker and found, well, I could barely move the rubble, but I found Papa's hand. It was cold.
She stopped and shook her head. I will not bawl like a baby because my grandfather is dead, she half snarled, half sobbed. Over 5 billion people on this miserable ball have died in the past years. I will not cry over anyone any more.
Yes, you will, Sherry said, leaning forward and taking her in her arms. You don't cry for him. You cry for yourself and that he is no longer there. Sherry wiped her eyes on the top of the girl's head. You cry for your loss.
I want him back, Callie shouted. He wasn't supposed to die. I needed him.
I want him back, too, Sherry said.
I do, too. The bastard just left me in the middle of a nuclear goddamn war.
Well, that's one way to look at it, Mueller responded, stirring a pot of mushy freeze-dried noodles and chicken. I always knew the old guy was tough, and I was right. It took a nuke to take him out.
Oh, Mueller, Callie said with a chuckling sob.
We'll go down and check on the body, Wendy said, sitting up. Why? Elgers replied. The environment is incredibly hostile. Going to recover a body that the Pazline have probably already eaten doesn't strike me as a good tactical action. Sherry turned on the captain with a snarl, but Masovich leaned forward and laid a hand on her arm. Captain, it's not good tactics, but it is good in other ways. Most of the best units refuse to leave anyone behind, living or dead. It's a 15-minute walk. It will also permit us to get a good look at the valley. Recon is part of our job description. Elgers frowned and nodded. Okay, approved. If the security conditions permit. But somebody has to stay here to guard the fort and watch the children. We're not taking them with us. I'll do that, Sherry said.
I see you're carrying, Callie said, wiping her eyes and deliberately changing the subject from the loss of her grandfather. And doing so like you know how. I guess you guys saw some action on the way.
The suburb is gone, Wendy said by way of reply. We got out through an endowee facility in the basement, in the agricultural section, actually. It had some weird facilities.
And part of the secret of my miraculous rebirth was explained, Elger said dryly. It was apparently the facility that rebuilt me.
And you too? Callie asked Sherry.
I got hit bad on the way out, Sherry replied.
Needle round right through her spine in midsection, Wendy explained. Back to front. Very bloody.
I woke up in a purple chamber, Sherry continued. Looking like this, she gestured at her body.
You look good, Callie said, starting to tear up again.
What?
I was just thinking how much Papa would like to see you like that, Callie said, regaining her composure.
Oh, he liked me well enough the other way, Sherry said with a shake of her head. Amazingly enough. I never got it, Mueller said, shaking his head in turn. Oldest guy in the group, and he gets the girl. Now there's, what, 4 women in this here cave, and I'm the one doing the cooking?
Oh, shut up, you old fogey, Callie said with a laugh. Where'd you pick up these 2 parasites? She asked Wendy.
Near Coweta Hydrological, she said with a laugh. I'd just fallen in a river. There I was, in a sopping wet shirt, trying to hold my weapon out of the water. I looked like a packed and stacked girl, which Mueller, of course, was happy to agree with.
We've been tasked with reconnaissance of the Pazline movement, Masovich said, but they moved faster than we could and the routes north got cut. I was thinking that if we could get some stuff from here, we could follow the Tennessee Divide across North Georgia and find one of the other passes that was holding out, then maybe get some transportation back to friendly territory.
By the time I realized how hot the area was, we were too close to go back, Wendy continued, making a motion like a mushroom cloud, and the kids needed stuff to keep them alive in the weather. It's turning real nasty out there.
Well, there's plenty here, Callie replied. Food, blankets, even rucksacks. As well as ammo and demo, but no guns.
Guns we've got, Masovich said. We've even got as much ammo as we can reasonably carry. Food and snival gear we're short on.
So, are we going to move out of here? Callie asked.
We probably need to, Jake replied with a nod. There's an ACS unit holding down the gap. Your dad's, by the way. But I don't know how long they can hold, and even if they do hold, I don't see who there is to relieve them. There's an infantry unit all the way up by Dillsboro and a shot-up Shiva gun up there, but nothing short of there.
He paused and he shrugged his shoulders.
I think your dad's unit's not going to be much but a spoiling attack.
Callie nodded her head in thought, but then shook it.
Dad, I refuse to worry about. He has been in more impossible situations than any other person in the world, I think, and he always comes out alive. Nobody else in his unit might, but he does. I guess he could die there, but I wouldn't bet. I was going to say I wouldn't bet the farm, but if anyone wants 400 acres of radioactive wasteland...
Speaking of which, Mueller said, we've got AIDs. You could talk to him if you want.
Well, that's an interesting idea, Callie said. But I don't want to joggle his elbow.
Even in the concrete-reinforced cave, the slam of distant explosions could be more felt than heard.
Just let him know I'm alive.
Major O'Neill.
Mike's arm was actually tired. It was mostly supported by the armor, but just holding it over his head for this long was getting hard. And not only was power going down like a waterfall, even the ammunition supply was starting to take a hit. The teardrops rounds were tiny, and, unlike the power packs, most of the resupply had survived. But the battle had already expanded over 60 million rounds. Suits had had to reload onboard ammunition at once, in one case twice. But that didn't mean the Puzzlim were running out of bodies.
Yes, Charlie, what horrible news or emergency is it now?
Not horrible at all, sir, more mixed. Callie O'Neill is alive. She is in contact with Sergeant Major Masovich from Fleet Strike Long Range Recon, and they have some other refugees that are in a shelter near your father's farm.
And Dad? Mike asked, suspecting why the news was mixed.
Your father is presumed dead, sir,
the AID said tonelessly.
Mike wrinkled his head at the tone and the wording.
Presumed?
Yes, sir. He was last seen in a bunker near the explosion of a lander.
Again, that toneless reply. Mike had noted that AIDs got all toneless when he hit a security bulk, at which point they became non-communication devices with remarkable alacrity.
Mike thought about a couple of things he'd like to say, but skipped them all.
How many able bodies at the shelter? And is there any ground transportation? 5 adults, and no, everything was destroyed by the blast.
He looked at the power graph and shook his head.
Give me General Horner.
Jack, it's Mike.
The major and the general went back farther than either of them cared to remember, but the casual familiarity was a sign of insult, not respect. Mike O'Neill had not yet forgiven the general for sending him on what was looking more and more like a forlorn hope.
Yes, Major?
Jack Horner was a tall, spare man with cold blue eyes that belied his apparent age. He keyed the AID to throw up a hologram of the battle around Raven Gap and shook his head. The image showed a solid tide of red going out of sight.
We've got a little problem, Mike said.
I can see that.
Oh, it's not the Puzzlim, per se.
After trying a few fancy tricks, they're coming at us in the same old way, and we're stopping them in the same old way. We're taking casualties, but mostly to weapon systems.
No, the problem is we've got about 3 hours' worth of power left.
What?
I blame it on Gunny Thompson, Mike said lightly.
It took Jack a moment to remember who Mike was talking about. Gunny Thompson had been on the design team for the ACS weapons system, along with a recently recalled web designer named Michael O'Neill and General Jack Horner.
Why Gunny Thompson, who the last time I heard was on Bar Juan?
Well, Mike said with a sigh, he wanted a ray gun, and the best I could do with the technology that was offered was a grav gun that shot fast enough it looked like a ray gun. The problem, of course, being that it meant it was a power hog.
Your guns are being used that much? Jack inquired.
Even in the hottest battles, the Puzzlim could only take an hour or so of being turned into offal. Then they retreated.
No artillery to slow them down, Jack, Mike responded. They're just piling themselves up, literally. And they're not really going forward, just piling. It's insane, even for the Puzzlim.
Maybe not, Horner replied.
Maybe they know we have a power problem, Mike asked.
Is there something you're not telling me?
Well, I got an intelligence report recently that suggested the Puzzlim might be able to penetrate the AID network.
So they're listening to this conversation, Mike asked?
That explains the ambush.
What ambush?
When we landed, the Puzzlim seemed to be laying for us, but they concentrated their fire on the support shuttles. That's when most of our spare power went away.
Another datum, Jack replied, running his hands through his hair. It had been white then, after rejuvenation, black again. Now it was turning white at the temples, and he was still a physical age of about 20. Command was hell. So, If they can listen to the AID network, what in the hell are we going to do? I can't disconnect my AID. It runs my damn suit. I'll think about it. Tell me what your answer to the power problem is in the meantime. There's a cache near here, one that's not on the network, come to think of it, Mike replied. It's got ammunition and a power pack, standard ammo with its own power. From when you were laying down caches, Horner asked? Correct. Here's my question. Are there any more heavy weapons available? Can the Shiva range? Do you want a direct answer, the general replied. Yes, I don't know. The Shiva is out of range, and it will be for some hours yet. I don't know of anything else. Horner smiled broadly, a sure sign that he was angry about something. What I normally would do is ask my AID, which gives me the impression our enemies might know more about our capability than we do. If we're penetrated, Mike replied. Yes. Horner looked around the temporary headquarters and suddenly realized the AID could see everything that he could. The human senior officers had come to depend upon the systems, which was suddenly starting to look like bad dependency. So who's coming to relieve us? Mike asked bitterly. I seem to remember you promising that the 10,000 would be on their way in a jiffy. But I notice they're still up in Virginia. Horner smiled thinly. I've got forces on the way. We've got penetrations all up and down the East Coast, Major. This is not the only emergency on my plate. I had to divert the 10,000 to handle a major incursion in the Shenandoah. I know you think your battalion comes first, but when I've got a big thrust headed right for the 6 Shiva that are almost finished construction and 2 suburbs, I have to decide where to allocate my assets. And in this case, the 10,000 is allocated to hold between the Pazlin and the suburbs, Major. There is one spot of bright news. I've been informed that a reconnaissance force has been detached from the Barhuan fleet. I don't know how large it is or what its priorities will be, but we might get some support from them. So what do you have on the way, General? For sure, not pie-in-the-sky reconnaissance forces that are probably one frigate and a drone. You can read your AID, Major. You've got one loser division tasked. I couldn't even take Balsam Gap from the easy side. And a Shiva gun that's rated as minimum time to repair of 5 days. So would you like to tell me who's going to play cavalry, General? They'll be there, Horner grounded out. No more than 24 hours from when the Shiva is repaired, and that will be sometime tomorrow. Today. Soon. Glad to hear that, General, but sometime tomorrow is going to be way too late. Here's the deal. In about 3 hours, I'm going to have to perform a breakout and leave this position. You can't do that, Major, Horner said furiously. I can, and I will. In 3 hours, we'll be down to throwing rocks. I've thrown rocks at the Pazlin in my time, but never as a primary assault method. As far as my scouts can tell, there is no practical end to the Pazlin forces. If we can recover the cache, a big if, and if you can find some fire support, a big if, we can retake the gap. And with the materials we'll have, we'll be able to hold for another, 12 hours or so. At our current kill ratio, we'll be able to kill approximately 6 million Pazlin before we become combat ineffective and get overrun, which I think would be enough even for you. If you can't recover the cache because the Pazlin pour over the position, or if you can't retake the pass, the whole eastern seaboard will be turned. Yep. So you better go find us some more firepower, hadn't you, General? Major O'Neill has disconnected, the AID informed him. Horner just nodded, smiling broadly. The headquarters had gotten remarkably quiet during the conversation, which had been fully audible, and now it kept quiet, since everyone knew exactly what that expression meant. Colonel Nix, Horner called. Yes, sir. The man was slight, bespectacled, and balding since he still hadn't hit the age that had been specified for rejuvenation. His uniform was somewhat rumpled, and he had a pen sticking out of the corner of one pocket, while all his blouse pockets bulged with materials. Anyone looking at him would have pegged him immediately as a geek. And they would have been right, except solely for the degree of geekiness. Colonel Nix wasn't just a geek. He was an uber-geek. His official title was Special Assistant to the Conarch for Information Security. He had been the first to determine that the 10th Corps had been hacked, how it occurred, and what to do to correct it. Since then, Horner had ensured he was always at arm's reach, and on more than one occasion, Nix had either foiled additional hacking attacks or detected them before they became a threat. Horner's abilities stopped at being able to compose a document, and he both trusted and liked his uber-geek. "Tell me why you think the AID net has been compromised," Horner said, smiling and without looking away from the wall. "As I said, sir, there were some indications, going all the way back to the battles with the 11th ACS Division in Nebraska, that the Posleen were either omniscient or reading the 11th's mail," the colonel replied. "The Dahrhel guarantee that the AID communications are unbreakable, and as far as I know, no human group has broken them. But they also guaranteed that we would be materially supported. They've made a lot of guarantees that didn't stand up. I have no hard data, sir. It's more a gut call than anything, sir, but..." "O'Neill's forces were apparently ambushed on landing," Horner replied. "They specifically targeted the supply shuttles." "Pretty nice datum, sir," the colonel said with a frown as he looked at the device around the general's wrist. Sir?" "I'm aware of the fact that they're probably aware of the fact, colonel," the general replied with a frown. That meant he found the point humorous. "That they know, that we know, that they know." "Yes, sir." "It probably won't work to reduce emissions, but we'll do that. Get rid of this thing," he continued, handing over the device. "Put it in a safe someplace far away and get me a telephone. I need to make some phone calls." "What are we going to do about the ACS, sir?" Nix asked. Everyone had heard the conversation. "We're not going to discuss what we're going to do about the ACS in front of an AID," Horner said. "That's the first thing we're going to do for the ACS." "Yes, sir," Nix paused. "Is there a second thing?" "Call the Shiva." "Rise and shine, Pruitt." Pruitt had been new to Shiva guns when the crew had taken over Shiva 9, but he had quickly noted one defect in the design. While the crew quarters were more than adequate, nearly sybaritic compared to the conditions of grunt infantry or regular tankers, they were located halfway across the turret. That meant a mad dash down a 30-meter hallway and climbing two sets of ladders before anyone could be at their position. While that wasn't a big deal most of the time, in the sort of conditions they had just been through 2 days of hard fighting, with Posleen ships appearing at any time, it was a recipe for disaster. And it wasn't like he could rack out in his chair. For whatever reason, the U.S. ground forces hadn't considered the rudimentary capability of reclining the chairs. He had heard rumors that some people had switched them out, but he had neither the time nor the inclination. He had a better idea. Stopping by one of the numerous military supply stores that popped up around every base had actually been difficult. Ground Force was in a real rush to get the Shiva back in commission, but he had managed and picked up a few items he thought might be of use, one of which he was currently using. Pruitt rolled over in the survival hammock and groaned, "Go away." "Come on, Pruitt," Indy jabbed him hard in the ribs. "Posleen lander's on the horizon." It was as if she had hit him with a cattle prod. Pruitt was out of the sack and halfway up the single set of stairs between him and the command center before he even noticed that he was up, or the laughter behind him. "I was joking, sleepyhead," Indy laughed, "but we do have to get going." "What now?" He looked at his watch and shook his head muzzily. 6 hours? Are the repairs done yet?" "Not all of them, but that's not going to matter if we don't get going." "Why?" "Let's just say that it sucks to be ACS. "Okay, General Keaton woke me up, too," Major Mitchell looked as if he hadn't gotten any sleep at all. In fact, he'd gotten nearly 3 hours. However, on top of 2 days' continuous combat ops, that was like saying none at all. All it had done was make him loggier. The meeting to discuss an operations plan for the Shiva side of the counterattack was taking place in the command center. It was one of the only places large enough. There were projection screens for laying out the plan, and it had enough chairs and ledges for everyone to sit. Besides the Shiva crew, there was a Captain Chan, her senior NCO, and Mr. Kilzer. All but Kilzer looked half asleep. He, on the other hand, was bouncing around like a ferret on a sugar high. Mitchell yawned and gestured at the projected map. "The ACS got chewed up on landing, and they're running short on power. In a couple of hours, they're going to have to pull out of the gap and get a resupply. After that, they're going to have to retake the gap, put the plug back in the bottle. To retake the gap, they need nukes. Guess who has the only nukes within 500 miles?
Reeves raised his hand.
Major, even if there weren't Pauseline in the way, there are an estimated 1.2 million.
The Normalese taciturn driver gulped and nodded his head.
Yes, sir, but even if there weren't, we couldn't drive that far in what?
We have to be to Franklin in, he glanced at his watch, 6.5 hours.
Impossible, Pruitt snapped. It took us, what, nearly a day to get from Franklin to here?
After a moment, he appended, sir.
Nonetheless,
Mitchell gave a thin smile to the group in the command center. Has anyone ever heard the traditional punishment for a good job?
Fine, sir, Indy said. The difficult we do immediately, thanks to Mr. Kilzer.
She nodded at the designer, who gave her a short, choppy nod back. And the brigade were nearly repaired and significantly rearmed. But the impossible takes time. We have to get across either the Rocky Knob Gap or Betty. God help us if it's Betty. To get to the fighting, we really can't zip up and down those slopes.
Well, I understand you have some experience at skiing them.
Please, Pruitt snapped. You weren't there or you wouldn't laugh. And, sir, there is the minor matter of 1.2 million Pauseline.
We still have full nuclear release, Major Mitchell said solemnly.
And if we've been given extra reloads...
Fine. We can hit concentrations that are not in contact with human forces, Sir Pruitt said reasonably.
What about the ones that are?
He gestured at the map where a line of blue and red met halfway to Rocky Knob Gap. We can't exactly nuke those, Pauseline.
No, but we can assault them, Kilzer interrupted.
Oh, yeah. Now there's a good idea.
No, seriously. That was the point of the upgrade. You have more frontal armor now than an M1A4. From the front, you're practically invulnerable to plasma cannon fire and will even shrug off most HVM hits.
Practically, Indy interrupted. Most?
In addition, there's the squirt gun, the designer continued. That should give you at least 10% more likelihood of survival.
Practically? Pruitt said, goggle-eyed.
Oh, quit being a baby, Paul said. You're the most heavily armored thing on Earth. Act that way.
Mitchell grabbed Pruitt's collar as he lunged out of the chair, but the civilian apparently had no idea what he had said.
Mr. Kilzer, we've just racked up more kills on this retreat than any Shiva in toto, much less in a single engagement. So if one of us is being a baby, it is probably for a good reason.
I'm not saying going in there with guns blazing, Paul argued, although...
No, Indy snapped.
Okay, okay. But what we'll do is provide firepower support to the division already in contact, neutralize the forces moving through Rocky Knob Gap, and then move forward in bounds with the division. If we get shot up too badly to move, they've got most of the brigade forming in ground mobile units, and they'll come up behind you to repair.
And Rocky Knob?
I was doing some mapping while you were asleep, the civilian said, bringing up a 3D schematic of the mountains in the area. You can't cross Rocky Knob. We need the road for movement of the support and combat forces.
We refer to them all as crunchies, Pruitt interjected.
Yeah, yeah, okay. We need the road for the crunchies. You'll have to cross Betty Gap again.
No, Reeves said, standing up. I'll quit first. I'll desert.
It won't be the first time, Paul said. I've got a few ideas that will help, and I'll iron them out on the way.
I'm not going up there, Pruitt said. I'm not going Shiva skiing again.
I'll work it out, Paul said sharply. I'm good at figuring out answers to problems. I do that. You shoot Pauseline ships. Or maybe you figure out the answers and we switch. I'm a pretty good gunner when it comes to it, and we can't use Rocky Knob.
Any other ideas how we're going to get to Franklin in time? Mitchell looked around the room at the glum faces, then shook his head.
I'll get with General Keaton so we can coordinate with the crunchies down the road.
Are there any other comments, questions, or concerns?
Just one, Pruitt said suspiciously. I think Mr. Kilzer has a pronoun problem.
He keeps saying, we.
Oh, I'm going with you, Paul said. All these systems are totally experimental. If anything goes wrong, I want to be here to fix it.
Oh, hell.